Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
This week I made some videos, thanks to my wonderful son, Jonathan, and while I'm happy with them, I also saw how seriously I take things, particularly when we're talking about our enlightenment, our spiritual evolution, or our soul. We all seem to get very serious. Something's got to change, and it's going to happen right now. My guest today is Fran Shaw, a person who takes these things seriously, but she can also look at them with humor in her funny, sardonic way. We're talking about ideas found in her book, Lord Have Murphy, and you can find out more about it at lordhavemurphy.com, M-U-R-P-H-Y, like in Murphy's Law. So welcome, you're listening to Full Power Living. We're dedicated to awakening the world to the power and importance and mastery of human emotions. Please chat with us as you listen to the show on emotionalpro.com and or on blogtalkradio.com/FPL. You can also subscribe through iTunes, and we have a toll-free number, 888-498-0570. That's 888-498-0570. So give us a call. Fran Shaw, PhD, is a longtime practitioner in a spiritual discipline. She's also a university professor and an award-winning author whose books include Notes on the Next Attention, Writing My Yoga, Poems for Presence, 50 Ways to Help You Write, and of course the book we're discussing today, Lord Have Murphy, Waking Up in the Spiritual Marketplace. It's reached number one status on Amazon. Murphy, the star narrator of the journey, takes the reader into this new level of awareness, has a wry comment on everything, and we'll be talking about that. So again, you can go to franshawbooks.com or lordhavemurphy.com. And Fran Shaw, welcome to Full Power Living.
Hello, Eileen. Hello, everyone. So glad to be with you.
So, I've read your book here. So the way you have written Lord Have Murphy, I think, compels your reader to really think about the spiritual concepts and ways of approaching them, because you play and stretch words and stretch ideas. And I was commenting to people that I couldn't skim this book. You have to think about every word. And my impression is that you've mixed your love of writing with your love for studying consciousness. Was that your impetus for writing this book?
The actual impetus for writing this book is that I was on sabbatical from the university, and you have to write a book.
Oh.
Very practical impetus always. And the reason I chose this topic of higher consciousness, of course, I've been reading a lot in the spiritual marketplace, you know, a lot of books that were coming out and in the self-help genre, things like that. And so I thought I really wanted to write something after so many decades of a particular practice. The problem is when I sat down to write, it was just, I felt like I was just making spinach out of it. It was like, it was so frustrating. And I happen to have with me some drawings by Bruce M. Sherman. They're very witty drawings, very unusual original drawings. There's about 40 of them are in the book, by the way, of, you know, seekers and things like that. And there was one of a kneeling man with a little bird on his head, and his arms are beseeching the heavens. And Bruce had written, "Lord have mercy," in the margin. And I just sort of laughed, and I thought, wait a minute, that's the key there. And I just wrote down on the computer, Lord, I wrote Murphy here. And all of a sudden, this other voice just came in like gangbusters and started writing, writing about the mystery has its dangers, putting one's hands all over it, believing in the one who thinks he knows. I mean, Murphy was saying things like, in the garden for a nanosecond and I become the Wikipedia of flora. And he was just talking about the dangers of writing about the mystery, and he was talking about things. It was just very funny the way he was talking about this, and I thought, this is so entertaining. I mean, I'm laughing out loud at the computer. And all of a sudden, what had become a very light-giving, humorous experience really sort of took over for 4 months, and Murphy wrote the book. Now, there is a second voice in the book, as you may note, the editor's voice. And that's a more kind of mature, balanced voice that's sort of, breaking the, Murphy goes at breakneck speed. So he's sort of like a, sort of interprets a little bit for us what Murphy is saying and brings us more into the realm of, I guess, you know, the mature adult sort of looking at it. It's Murphy's editor trying to get him to write even more clearly about this topic. So, but that's what happened. Something took over and wrote the book, and it's very, unusual that that happened. My last book, which was also about other forms of attention and different levels of attention, is a very, very different book.
It is said that creativity is channeling. You know, my next question I was addressing to you is your primary aim to wake your reader up, but it sounds with that explanation like it's more realistic to ask if you think Murphy's primary aim is to wake the reader up.
I don't think that's the primary aim of the book. I think that's, a very ambitious aim. I think that a better aim would be not to put the reader deeper into sleep. because sometimes these books on so-called higher consciousness just put you completely into your thinking, completely into your head, so that you don't even have a sense of your body anymore. And so what Murphy's actually is doing is he's helping us sort of lighten up about our suffering, for one thing. In other words, when he talks about different ways that he gets caught, he gives them like medical names, like this is a case of identificationalis, judgmental lost focusitis, he gives it a name like that, so that we can sort of laugh at it. Oh yes, I'm judgmental that way at that moment. I know what that's like. He says, is that the sun blazing gold across the horizon? I hadn't noticed because my world has shrunk to the size of a kumquat. And I think we, at many times, our world just shrinks to the size of a kumquat. We're involved in an obsessive thought and a worry feeling. I mean, certainly my world is like that. And what he's trying to say is that there's these moments, because we have these other very expanded moments, and we know they're not the whole story when we're down that rabbit hole, these moments when I'm sort of hit over the head by life or kind of socked in the gut by my own thinking, this suffering that goes on in us, really could be sort of the necessary reminder that simply my consciousness has contracted. And so then there's definitely all these techniques that we're learning, all these tools we have now that shows us how we can expand that consciousness again. I think he says, go wide, says the ocean, says the sky. It's going wide with the attention again when we notice we're caught. And he has specific ways of talking about this that even as an app you can buy. He calls it Wake Book. There's a chapter in Lord M. Murphy called Wake Book where he presents some tools that one can use when one notices that the world has sort of contracted for me. I'm stuck in this feeling of being discouraged or this fear, all these kinds of, amygdala states of mind, the old fight or flight responses that are happening on their own. And he talks about seeing as one of the ways to open the door to another level, to self-awareness. And then he talks about something beyond seeing. By that he means being observing oneself almost as if a camera is on me at this moment, just observing the body in a neutral way, like another object in the room, sensing the top of my head, my seat on the chair, my soles of my feet. Maybe coming into, an awareness of the movements of breathing in my body or that I hear my voice, I hear the sounds around me. Anything that sort of breaks the hold of that contracted state, that's sort of like the, default automatic pilot mood, and moving into this sense of, wow, wait a minute, I'm witnessing this. There's something that's observing this now. That's the foot in the door. And then there's another whole level beyond that, which Murphy discusses, finds, and really vibrates with at certain moments in the book. And that is the heart of the book, the talking about this completely other level of being alive beyond the kind of self-awareness that we are even beginning, most of us, many of us, to be in at some moments during the day. And we can talk about that if you want, anytime.
I wanted to ask you to read from your book. I don't know if you have a copy with you. If you don't, I can read it. But the whole, your chapter 6, head case studies.
I
like that section in there, and it'll give us a sense of how Murphy operates and also talk about how our thoughts run away with us, the way you were just discussing or mentioning.
Yes, I do have the book in front of me. So just talking about this is sort of how he talks about identification is the word he used. When we get identified with something and our world shrinks and we're thinking. Do you want me to read a little bit from that one?
I would, yes, where it starts, news flash on page 57.
Sure. This is chapter 6 of Lord Have Murphy, Waking Up in the Spiritual Marketplace. This is called Head Case Studies. News flash. The Federal Bureau of Identification has come up with a listening device that allows you to identify exactly what you're identified with. It even has a remote scanner, so it works on nearby people, too. Think of it. You're driving down the road, remembering the wedding, and you can flip a switch to hear what every other driver at that instant is dreaming, too. Johnny Porsche cutting you off while envisioning that Victoria's Secret model with the angel wings. Annabelle Blue Nova on the way home from work making lasagna in her head. Dr. Changelanes going down the mental list of Drugola's unfortunate side effects. Endless brains to surf. It's better than satellite radio. Ever catalog your thought traffic? Mosquito mind buzzing around on the windshield so you forget you're even in the car? It's mind's usual condition. Attention gone passive and mind very busy on the surface pulled every which way. Here's what completely filled my rear view mirror at moments this morning. Internet out. No return call. Last Tuesday. Mold on strawberries. Next Tuesday. What is that smell? Confiscatory taxes. What is that noise? Rude driver. Rude fishwife at fish counter. Rude clerk. It's an abrasive world. You know what I'm talking about. Back up, Murph. Whoa. Watch out for that gremlin. What exactly do you mean by identification? Because it's not your father's definition, I identify with a certain group, meaning I am like them. And it's not identify, meaning to label or classify. And it's not your driver's license.
That's great. I know that our listeners can really, from that passage, get the idea of what I was talking about, how Murphy really works with your mind, and you have to pay attention to almost every word to really get where he's going. Now, that section is followed up by an editor's note, and the editor, like you said, is the adult voice, And I'll just skip to the last paragraph, which I will read. When one is identified, thoughts take over and there's no focusing on presence. In contrast, when one is awake, thoughts go by like clouds below, not disturbing one's focus. Inner quiet comes with tuning in to this other attention. There may be moments with no thoughts, just impressions. Might one call this non-identification? So that really helped me, having the editor's comments in there, because sometimes I'd be reeling and going, what is he saying? You know? And yet, if I would, especially after I read the editor's notes, if I would go back and reread Murphy's statement, I saw that I could get what the editor was saying, but many times I found other things that spoke to me as well. So it's a fascinating way of doing that, and I love the humor. This is not an easy thing to do, to put humor in all of this.
It really is sort of surprising to me also. That's why I say when the Murphy voice came out, I was trying in my own way for those 4 months. It was exactly 4 months, by the way, from the beginning of the sabbatical to the end, and the book was written and done exactly in that amount of time and was refused to be edited also.
It's all those years of spiritual work on your part. Somebody was looking after you.
Well, it really feels as if, I certainly was trying morning, noon, and night. I'd gone away. I was in a little room, actually by the ocean with a computer, sort of on my own. So morning, noon, and night, it was just always an effort to try to return to a sense of inhabiting the body with attention, and even trying to be aware of this finer energy, this life force that's, you know, animating this body over and again and again and again, to see if I could recognize that. Because for me, that's a hallmark that I'm sort of moving into a more awakened state, when I can not only be aware of my body and things like that, but that I can be sensitive to this subtle energy, the sacred energy that's the source of creativity, for one thing, because it's the source of creation. I mean, it's what's keeping me alive and my heart beating and my lungs moving. To be, see if I can be aware of that, that this higher, the Lord, in the title of Lord have Murphy, as well as the Murphy. So that I was really very attuned with that, and trying to repeat and recognize that again and again, while I considered different topics that people talk about in these books on higher consciousness, such as identification and such as writing about it, the different levels that people are at when writing about these things. And this, and so everything sort of, the topic appeared, but then Murphy talked about it. And he's just much more, how shall I say it? He just tells me like it is. You know, I'd be much more diplomatic if I were writing. He just absolutely does. He parodies things, and he makes up words, you know, about knee-jerk reactions and manipulationships and all sorts of, he just makes up words all the time, and he goes very fast. That's why the editor, sort of need the editor, so you, and the art also, so you can sort of catch your breath for a moment and look at the caption under the drawing for a moment, so you can sort of take stock of where we are. It's kind of like, the book is kind of like, if you've been in this sort of zone for a while where you're interested in higher consciousness and you've read every book that's come out, this sort of cleans your glasses. One of the mm-hmm. people commenting on the books, it sort of cleans your glasses, so you take another look at what you're being told. And the idea is that really the bottom line, as it were, in the book is that there's a quality of attention, attention with a capital A, finer attention, a higher intelligence, capital I, a higher power, this mysterious something, this vibration, whatever it is that's animating us, that's in all of us. And because we're human beings, we can actually perceive that directly. And when we do, our level changes, and we can tell it just as clearly as we know night from day. And that's where I think all these mindfulness practices are leading, that we're doing now, yoga and even in corporations, meditation, mindfulness meditation, things like that, that yeah. they're opening this door to this receiving this quality of energy that's not mine and not in my control, but absolutely transforms my state when it's perceived. It's at the heart of the book.
Yes, and there are people, as in all things, there are people taking strange advantage of that. You call them gurus gone viral. And I want to talk about that with you when we come back from our break, all right?
Sure, great.
I'm talking today with Fran Shaw, who's author of Lord Have Murphy, Waking Up in the Spiritual Marketplace. We'll explore more of this extraordinary door into attention next on Full Power Living.
How difficult is it for you to ask directly for what you really want, to take responsibility graciously and willingly for your mistakes, or to relate with others because it's fun instead of because you need something from them? Most people believe manipulation and codependence are normal behaviors for adults. They may be common, but they're not normal. Manipulative behaviors really are designed to be part of childhood, to be put away as things of the past when we become adults. So, if you're ready to let manipulation and codependence be part of your past, then get the mini course I've created for you, Ending Codependence, The Bottom Line. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, offering you a formula that you can follow for creating healthy, manipulation-free, and lasting intimate relationships. I also give you the tools and principles that you can use to develop lasting immunity to codependence. get Ending Codependence today at www.emotionalpro.com. That's emotionalpro.com.
All right. Welcome back to Full Power Living. I have a few announcements. Please sign up now at emotionalpro.com to be on our mailing list so we can send you our biweekly newsletter telling you about our programs. Next week, I'll be talking with Bob Wheeler about negotiating the emotions of money. This is one you'll want to be sure to catch, and that's next Thursday, November 5th at 9 a.m. Pacific time. And my birthday is on Thanksgiving Day this year, so I have a gift for you. We're putting together a very special program for that day that can help you view life from a different perspective. Start your Thanksgiving Day with a robust review of my last 72 years. On some of our upcoming shows, we're going to be exploring grief recovery from pet loss, how to awaken your third eye, and we're also going to be looking at a unique program for keeping new mothers and babies safe and healthy in the jungles of Ecuador and Peru. So thank you very much for listening and for helping us with our mission of transforming our world through the mastery and power of human emotions. Well, now I'm talking today with Fran Shaw, who is the author of Lord Have Murphy. And before our break, Fran, I mentioned that you talk about gurus gone viral. This, you have some concerns that come up in the book, like the proliferation of gurus who teach others about consciousness. You pun their names. One was Dream a Better You with I'm Awake and You Are Not, LLC, to give an idea of how you do this. Talk about what it is that you think is happening in the world of spirituality these days that brings up this concern.
I guess it's really nothing new under the sun. Murphy says weapons of mass instruction are proliferating, and I mean they're on the supermarket bulletin board and all over the internet. There's even awards on the internet for different courses that different traveling gurus create, and they have all sorts of things going on. Now, certainly, in many, the impulse and perhaps even the experience that led them to do this is absolutely genuine and very much may come from an honest motivation. But however, it is in the marketplace, and so there's always the danger of spiritual materialism taking over, you know, where you sort of get the initiating impulse sort of can get lost in the way things have to be packaged and marketed and promoted, even just to get anyone to notice. So it's a conundrum. And so there's a section in one of the chapters in Lord Have Murphy where the section is actually called Attention is the Teacher, where Murphy addresses the question in the Maze of Sages, how to see my way through. Because for Murphy, a list of credentials or even a whole lot of followers doesn't guarantee that the person speaking is someone that you should take on as a teacher. So I think that the important thing here is that I really have to be able to have a certain degree of self-awareness and to be as present as possible, as alert as possible, you know, sensing my body, feeling there's a tension in my body, listening in an active way where I'm also aware of breathing, things like that, so that I have some awareness when I'm actually listening to someone. And then I may know if the teacher is genuine, that the teacher there, when I'm in that teacher's presence, I actually feel that I become steadier in wakefulness. Or perhaps my level of consciousness goes up dramatically and I feel like I'm entirely different from when I arrived. There is the good news that, you know, down the road, the time comes when the outer teacher may no longer be needed because A spiritual guide is one in whose presence I come to discover the teacher in me, which is this finer attention, this energy that is animating me. It knows better than me. It's not in my control, but it's an intelligence in me that bypasses thought. And so when I can become aware of that, it restores peace in myself. I can let my thoughts, even my beliefs, even the person go. Everything sort of lets go on its own, because all of a sudden my attention is joining this finer attention, capital A. And so I'm in a space that's sort of light-filled, and there are no shoulds in it. You know, there's no instruction in it. There's just attending to it second by second. And Murphy talks about this over and over in the book, and, of course, so does the editor. And it's our only kind of reliable guide. Self, capital S, is our reliable guide in the spiritual marketplace, you know, that we might align with whoever is in whose presence we are. And if we align and feel that there's something much lighter and something much more alive and vivifying is coming through, and that my state, I'm becoming more and more focused and more concentrated, then that seems to me to be a good teacher to work with. And I've had the experience of working with a teacher like that.
But it leaves us with an interesting challenge that forms in my head, is that we need to be awake in order to awaken.
It's so true. It's a conundrum. I don't know what I'm seeking until I actually find it, taste it, experience it, and then maybe I can recognize it again and understand, you know, what it means to live for a few moments at another level, a level even beyond self-awareness. I mean, that's like a continuum, but I'm talking about crossing a threshold from self-awareness into awakening. I don't know who's speaking about this now, but I figured might as well add a voice to the conversation.
Right, I think a lot of people are. One of the other things you do that really captured my attention is you restate Murphy's Law. We're familiar with the Murphy's Law that if anything can go wrong, it will. But you offer the new Murphy's Law, if anything can go wrong, it will, to wake us up. And as a psychotherapist for the last 40 plus years, I have come to the point, I'm transpersonally oriented, of telling people this is a big giant school and every experience is an opportunity to learn something. So I really love Murphy's statement of gratitude for having so many challenges, that is, so many things to learn.
Yes, all those hits on the head and punches to the stomach, and he says, you know, I must be pretty sick or pretty lucky to have all these reminders coming my way. Yeah, they're really, if we could just take these, all these moments of sort of the mind-forged manacles, the suffering that I'm sort of creating for myself, you know, because of this automatic thinking and reactive mode, that this automatic pilot mode, which is always reacting to things coming in. If I could just take that, because I've had other experiences that are expansive, you know, walking by the ocean, coming out of a yoga class where I feel I am in a different place. So if I could take these moments of suffering and pain as just sort of like the temple bell ringing. Oh, wait a minute. This is the Zen monk hitting me on the head. This is the temple bell ringing that's saying, wait a minute. What more is here now? Is it possible even now, even like this, to see if I can mobilize attention and even shift into just seeing myself like this, aware of that sensation in my stomach, just seeing the expression on my face, not to learn about myself, because it's really not about content. The shift to a higher state is not about content, it's about a connection. It's about a vibration. It's about having... I'm such an authority on this, gee.
Murphy has really helped you.
he's helped me, right, clarify, I don't know what, you know. But it's a connection between mind, feeling, and body. When those three parts are together, and that happens when one is trying to observe oneself, in the effort to just mobilize attention, just see myself in a neutral way, just however I am, that permits, when those three are together, mind, body, feeling, that permits possibly the reception of this Lord coming in, of this higher power, of this actual, I don't know what it's, there are many, no words for it, many names for it. You know, is it the Tao, the life force, the Chi, Lord, God, Buddha, nature, whatever, self, capital S, intelligence, capital I. I like the word attention, capital A, because to me it feels more like a very fine energy. It's just the beginning, by the way, of that dimension. It's not the end of it to have this experience, because it opens more and more if one can just cross that threshold. At the same time as one's living one's ordinary life and in any emotional state, it's possible also to have awareness of oneself, and then even also to have this receptivity to this other stream that's so near, that's animating us at every moment. And that's what Murphy talks about in the book. Maybe I don't have to quiet myself. Maybe I don't have to think a certain way. Maybe I don't have to behave a certain way. Maybe it's just about a shift in where my attention is. I don't have to change anything about myself except where the attention is. And his aim in the book is to be in both streams at the same time, Lord and Murphy, hyphenated, both this stream of higher energy that's animating us at every moment, that's really the teacher in me, and the ordinary, you know, however Murphy is, doesn't matter how he is, because when this other connection is made, it's like an inner sun coming out. The sun comes out. When the sun comes out, it really doesn't care if an ant is crawling across the rug, because the sun is radiating with life. So something so much more compelling is on the scene, that the personal sort of like drops away in the moments that one is connected internally in that way. That's what Murphy's talking about in Lord Have Murphy.
Wow, that's great. There are so many things that you and Murphy consider in Lord Have Murphy. And one of my favorite chapters is on higher learning. I think it's quite masterful. That's where you discuss studying for 10 years at the Sit Chat Ananda Institute for
right.
Lifelong Learners. And it's a really great look at the kinds of things that can happen when we come together to open ourselves spiritually. So tell us a bit about the Sit Chat Ananda Institute for Lifelong Learners that you attended.
Right. Well, of course, it's a pun on Satchit Ananda, which is, being, and those are the Hindu words for, those are actual Hindu words. So this is the Sit Chat Ananda. Ananda, of course, is bliss, but where people sit and chat about higher consciousness. Now, it's very interesting. The chapter is sort of, it's actually based on, as you said, and it was definitely more than 10 years, but definitely many years in working in a place, according to a specific discipline. And what can happen in terms of the organization, you know, everything gets organized, and then there's a hierarchy, and then there's jockeying for position, and all under the guise of we know and you don't, and we never can do it, but we want to be awake. And so Murphy just sort of pokes fun at some of these things, and I think it's a just human nature that there's going to be this pitfall in any organized something around a teaching. So it's a challenge. It's just another challenge to see if it's possible, even there, even in those circumstances where a lot of other things are going on that just seems like, illness, that one can still find the way to have the attention open into what's animating everything. Even complaining, even whining about consciousness, everything, something animating even that, complaining about incapacity and things like that. I can't do it, I don't have time to do it, I never do it, you know, but I want to do it, all those things. There's an energy that's completely neutral, completely objective, that's lighting up the person that's saying those things. And so it's a question of, can I, you know, see past what's happening and connect again with this source of creation in me, in everyone, in everything. Vibrate with this, find this energy, no matter what I'm hearing, no matter what impressions are coming in, that I can receive at the same moment this impression of this finer energy, this finer attention, this subtle energy that's permeating every cell of my body at every moment. Because when I can actually come into an experience of this other quality of energy, then what other people say and do, it does not prick. It does not, the judgment is not there as it usually is. The energy isn't going into judgment. The energy is going into this attending to what is lighting up the body, what is lighting me up here listening. And it's an interesting thing can happen in those moments, that the goodness of this higher energy flowing through us, it brings by its nature a feeling of love and compassion. I mean, I maybe can't love people when they're annoying to me, but this energy can. I maybe can't accept when this one is saying this to me or that one is doing that to me. But if there's this shift into this energy, it's the entire perspective changes, because something, as I said, so much more compelling appears, that judgment sort of drops away by its own. And there's a compassion for oneself as well. And one realizes, I have been like that person speaking this now. I also feel all those things, and I've said all those things, and I've behaved exactly in the same way. You realize that in yourself, you know, everything that's annoying to you out there has probably been something that you've done or still do. And yet one has a completely different perspective, because the goodness of this energy lighting one up, flowing through one, just changes everything. For the moments that we are in relationship with it, we are altogether different creatures. I think this is when we are normal human beings. We're aware of both streams, and we are human, a human being, just being.
That's a great explanation. Let me close out this segment with a quote that you offer, which is, maybe our hope for real change is that enough human beings actually wake up, just enough so a finer energy begins circulating among us, just enough to permeate the atmosphere. Consciousness can be catching. To make a difference, it may not even have to go viral. Maybe we can talk a little bit more about that when we come back. I'm talking to Fran Shaw, author of Lord Have Murphy. This is Full Power Living. We will be right back.
Parent, have you found all the parenting information you've been hearing lately a bit confusing? Are you having trouble sorting out the best response to your defiant child, or feeling hopeless about regaining respect from your teen, or determining whether your actions as a parent are the right ones? Instead of the usual pressures of parenting that you've been experiencing, you can partner with your child, raising incredible kids who are destined to become amazing adults. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, giving you the opportunity to become the incredible parent for incredible kids. We have the method and the tools. You bring your optimism for learning and the kids. Raise Incredible Kids offers a comprehensive system for raising kids who are responsible, make their own great decisions, and become immune to peer pressure. To get you ready for this new era in parenting, get my free 10-page report, Incredible Communication That Helps You Create Incredible Kids, by visiting RaiseIncredibleKids.com now. That's RaiseIncredibleKids.com.
And And in case you're just joining us, I'm talking today with Fran Shaw, who is a university professor, a spiritual practitioner, and author of many books, but we're talking today about Lord Have Murphy, Waking Up in the Spiritual Marketplace. So right before we broke, Murphy and slash you suggested that if we have just enough people waking up, then consciousness could be catching, and we might not have to work hard even at that, if I'm understanding that correctly. Do you have comments on this?
It's very funny when Murphy says, like you read, consciousness is contagious, and it may not even have to go viral. We don't know what the critical number is, and it may be very low for people on Earth, enough awakened people on Earth to actually embody this finer energy, and so it can come into the Earth. There's no way. We are in a unique position, human beings on the planet, as opposed to everything else on the planet that's living, in that we're the only creatures that can allow this higher level of energy, this animating energy, to be embodied in us and then come into life on Earth. So it's a unique, I feel that's why I'm actually here on Earth, you know, that to be sort of a conduit for this energy. But of course it requires that you have a taste of it many, many times during the day, and of course you will love that because it's wonderful, obviously. But the wonderful thing about this is that if we have a free attention, an attention that's freed even by just observing ourselves frequently, whether or not we actually shift into the receiving mode where we actually have that total receptivity and total sensitivity so this other energy appears and we recognize it, whether or not it goes that far, this ability to have a more sustained and free attention in myself where my attention isn't caught every second by the things we talked about before, you know, thinking about last week, worrying about next week, you know, where we actually come into a sensation of the body, sort of ground the attention in a sensation of our bodies, then everything becomes possible for bringing something, an energy, a very high vibration onto the earth that denser vibrations just can't survive in. You know, they're just going to, you know, it's like, you know, bacteria even, or, you know, things that are another heavier, denser vibration. It's like when the light lights up a dark room, you know, the dark room is just lit then, you know, it's lit. And so we have this possibility, this unique position, being human beings with these this ability to let something come through us that could change the planet, much needed for the planet, obviously, for the planet now. And whether it's 100 awakened men or 200 awakened men, whatever the number is, and I have a feeling it's not a large number, that would change the atmosphere of the planet just by their being in this receptive mode, who knows? The important thing for us is that the perks or byproducts even of becoming self-aware and then maybe even allowing this receptivity that allows another energy to come in, the beginning of a whole dimension of higher energies. It's what Murphy says, you know, at any moment, am I in the stream or up the creek? If I'm up the creek, I can think, well, wait a minute, I'm also still in the stream. So is it possible now to see myself here, to be aware of, you know, my hands, as I remember, I'm washing my hands at the sink. Wait a minute, I'm doing this automatically, but I could also see how the water is on my hands, and I could, you know, say, well, for today, I'm just going to simply, every time I walk up and down these steps, or from here to there in my house or on the street, I'm just going to try to be aware of each foot in contact with the pavement. I'm going to try to ground myself in awareness many moments during the day when I'm holding my cup of coffee or my cup of tea. I'm just holding it for a moment. Maybe I could be here for that, or brushing my teeth at night, or how do I look when I'm taking a shower? You know, it's like, there's so many neutral moments that can be infused with self-awareness that are tremendous help in terms of tools for then when we're really suffering, then when we're really down the rabbit hole and I'm really afraid and obsessing about something, or I'm really nervous and anxious and I can feel that cortisol shooting through my body. Not that I want to change anything about what's happening in my body or my experience, but that I can take it as a reminder, again, that neutral bell that's saying, wait, let's widen the field of awareness for a moment. Let's see if I can mobilize attention and call it back from where it's gotten hooked by this thing or hooked by that thing in me, and just see if I can again, because the same force is always there. How could it not be? The thing that's keeping us alive, that's coming into us at every moment, even with the air that we breathe, you know, and that's keeping us alive, it's always here. And it's something, this sacred energy, it's really sacred energy. We can tune into it. We can, because we're human beings. We can perceive it directly. But someone has to be home. Someone has to be, you know, paying attention and staying with attention, with a free attention in the body, in order for that to be received. So I think that that's what we're talking about, embodying this higher energy and letting it come into Earth as often as we can, loving it because it frees us of fear and anxiety. Things like that sort of just drop away because you're vibrating in a different density, a much lighter density than those other emotions, those afflictive kinds of emotions and things. So it has the freedom of making you feel like, yes, I'm free. Just to be myself, just to be here, just as I am in this other energy.
What I was taking from that, remembering that I went on a cruise, Fran, in March, and a little over 20 years ago, I developed a method for turning my fear over to God, for stepping into faith. And many people who are listening have heard this story, so I'll make it brief. But I decided to fill some of my bucket list items. I swam with dolphins, I went zip lining, and I also had an opportunity to swim with a jaguar. I thought putting myself in physical danger, I would feel fear, because I hadn't really been feeling much fear since I developed that system and followed it. But I was surprised to realize I didn't have a second of fear. And that's sort of what you're talking about here, I think.
For me, that fear and anxiety, little sensation of it, occurs to me a lot. I mean, it really does occur to me a lot. I mean, I have a child in this world, and I have just the general free-floating anxiety of the planet sometimes hits me like 4 or 5 in the morning, you know. It's like, wait a minute, what's this? You know, you open your eyes or come out of the sleep at night, and I was like, what is this slightly distressed sensation? It doesn't have to do with my life. Where's that coming from? So, I mean, I think there is something in there's a lot of forces at work that we have no idea about in us that we experience. But the wonderful thing is that it can be, if it's just, you know, not based on something actually real and imminent, something that's threatening me, you know, that then maybe I could have this, use it as a reminder that there's a possibility to, let it be, embrace it in the sense that one just widens one's field of awareness and then let that do what it does in that field of awareness. I mean, maybe it become very interesting for me to listen for a moment, just listening to sounds with both my ears, listening to life in this moment can sometimes be just shift the attention into a wider field of awareness, and then something happens there. I also don't think it matters what the motivation is for one to wish to shift into a higher level, that any motivation's okay, so long as one then actually does, you know, cross over into self-awareness, or maybe even into awakening. So fear can be useful. I'm not interested too much personally, although I guess I don't like it. I don't like what it feels like, and I don't like that it takes control at many times. But on the other hand, I'm not savvy enough to cherry pick what I should and shouldn't do, or what I like and don't like in myself. I feel that's all coming from the level of sleep. So who knows, but that fear may be my greatest ally, my greatest reminder for waking up. So right now, as much as I'd like to get rid of the kind of quote, afflictive, unquote, emotions, I don't know if I want to do that because I'm not so sure they aren't absolutely necessary to remind me of this other level that one can live at.
Well, that's I think, a really, really good point. And it could have been totally ego-driven on my part because I was 50 at that time, and I had been afraid my entire life, and I just got sick and tired of it and wanted to find a way to get past it. And I will say, just for you to think about, Fran, that that my emotions haven't shut down. It's just that fear itself is not uppermost the way it was. And perhaps that shift would occur without doing anything, as you say, just by paying attention.
That's very good, though, Eileen, because you see, I mean, Murphy sort of talks about how certain kinds of manipulations of feelings and thoughts can be a side alley to distract you from actually seeing how it is and then opening to this other level. I personally want to modify that a little bit because sometimes if we're in so much fear or so much pain, there isn't even the glimmer of light or even the thought that there's another way to be alive. You know what I'm saying? So
yes.
It may be, depending on each person has to know for himself what they need at what stage of their, at what moment in their lives. I mean, if I'm always afraid, my God, I need relief. I need relief before anybody, I can even hear about something else. You know? So I totally respect what you're saying, and I think it's very good. The interesting thing about this shift into a higher level or into this flow of finer energy, is that then no one part of me dominates. Like, well, everything can be there. Ego can be there. Walk, talk, do things. Everything can be there. But no one part sort of takes over the whole thing and then runs the whole show, which is the sleeping mode. That's what's wonderful. If there's a sense of this animating quality at the same time as one is speaking, walking, you know, whatever's going on, there's enough of a balance there that I'm less susceptible to something taking over me, which means I'm less susceptible to, for example, someone doing something to me that steps on my toes, and then I have this aggressive, you know, Murphy calls it knee-jerk reaction. You know, that's how aggression just keeps moving through me and through other people, because there's nothing here. There's nothing here to keep it from just reaction and then aggression. And I don't know if I really want to be a conduit for more aggression to come into the world. I really think that being in a more balanced state where I just let myself be as I am, but also have this taste again and again, this recognition again and again of this other quality, that helps me you know, not go down the rabbit hole, not get completely lost for a long period where any kind of emotion or any kind of aggression can just, you know, use my body and myself as a playground and come, you know, keep coming into the world. So it's a help for us to be responsible for our state.
Thank you. Unfortunately, it's time for us to, fortunately, unfortunately, depending on your state, I suppose, it's time for us to stop. I really appreciate your sense of humor and your handling this lightly. And I want to just end with the statement that you have, the best help for waking up is to be with someone who is awake. But that's another story. I just want to tell you, Fran, that it's been fun to spend time with your awakeness. And I appreciate you allowing your thoughts, your concerns, your puzzling to flow out into this book, Lord Have Murphy. It's certainly provocative and affirming, I think. So thank you for that and for being with us here on Full Power Living today. It's been a pleasure.
Wonderful, Eileen. You have just been a wonderful interviewer, and I enjoyed it very much. And you know, sending out what I wish for everyone, that we can all wake up. We are beginning to wake up, and we can continue, because I think from it, it does come our best action in the world. So let's shine big. Let's keep going.
That's good. Maybe I'll call this the Shine Big Show.
Great.
Okay. All right. Thank you. So let me remind you that you can find out more about Fran Shaw and Murphy at franshawbooks.com, franshawbooks.com, or also you can find out more at lordhavemurphy.com. Remember that next week I'm talking with Robert Wheeler about the money nerve, navigating the emotions of money. That's Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific time, noon Eastern, for our live broadcast. So the production of this show has been collaborative between Paul Johnston of Fresh Talk Media and me. And thank you, Paul, for helping me to learn new skills. Perhaps I, too, will become awakened. For now, I'm Eileen Dillon, your host, reminding you to pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.